way. However, a Thracian horseman suddenly rode by Dositheus and chopped off his right arm. Then Gorgias escaped to the town of Marissa. After our troops, under the command of Esdras, had been fighting a long time and were worn out, Judas prayed, "Our Lord, please be our leader, and help us win this battle." In his native language, Judas sang some hymns and then shouted the battle cry as he led his troops in a surprise attack that forced Gorgias and his army to retreat. Judas prays for the dead. Judas brought his troops together and led them to the town of Adullam. It was now the day before the Sabbath, so they went through the traditional ceremonies to prepare themselves for that holy day. Then they celebrated the Sabbath. The next day, Judas and his troops had to collect the bodies of those who had been killed in battle and to bring them home for burial in their family graves. But under the shirt of each dead soldier, they found good luck charms in the shape of those idols in the temple at Jamnia. Since our Jewish law doesn't allow us to wear such things, everyone knew why these soldiers had died in the fighting. Our troops praised the Lord, who judges fairly and makes all secrets known. They also begged the Lord to forgive this terrible sin. Judas, that wonderful man, said, "You have seen for yourselves how God punished those who disobeyed him, so I warn you not to sin." Then Judas collected from his troops 2,000 silver coins, which he sent to Jerusalem as payment for a sacrifice to forgive this sin. Judas did this generous and honorable thing because he firmly believed God raises the dead to life. Otherwise, it would have been useless and foolish of him to have spent this money on prayers for the dead. But he was a man of deep faith, who was convinced that God's faithful servants would receive a wonderful reward after death. So he paid for a special sacrifice to take away the sin of those dead soldiers. King Antiochus invades Judea. Chapter 13. In the year 149 of the Greek kingdom, someone told Judas and our troops, "King Antiochus Eupator is on his way to invade Judea, and he is bringing his guardian Lysias, who runs the government for him. They are leading a huge Greek army with 110,000 soldiers, 5,300 cavalry, and 22 elephants. Besides this, they have 300 chariots with sharp blades sticking out from the sides of their wheels." King Antiochus puts Menelaus to death. Menelaus, the high priest, tried to deceive King Antiochus and Lysias by encouraging them to attack us. He did not do this for the benefit of the country, but to regain his position as high priest. Meanwhile, Lysias told Antiochus that Menelaus was to blame for all of the country's problems. Then our God, the King of Kings, turned Antiochus against Menelaus. And right away, Antiochus sentenced this troublemaker to be killed in the town of Berea, where they had a special way of executing prisoners. In Berea, there was a 75-foot tower full of ashes, and the inside wall of the tower sloped down into the ash pile. Criminals, who were guilty of dishonoring a temple or of some other horrible crime, were thrown down inside the tower to die. So that was how the lawbreaker Menelaus died, and without even a proper burial afterwards. Such a death was a perfect punishment for someone who had so often disgraced the temple altar together with its holy ashes and fire. The Battle of Modin. Antiochus was an arrogant and savage king who wanted to punish the people of Judea more severely than his father had ever done. He was on his way to invade the country when Judas found out what was happening. So Judas told the people to pray day and night, and they prayed, "Our Lord, we need you now more than ever before. Please don't let our law and our nation and our holy temple be destroyed. You have just given your people a fresh start. Don't let those godless Gentiles rule us again." For 3 days they lay face down on the ground, crying and refusing to eat while begging the Lord to have pity and send help. After this, Judas encouraged everyone, then ordered his troops to prepare for battle. Judas met privately with the nation's leaders, and together they decided that with God's help, Judas could attack and defeat Antiochus before he invaded Judea and captured Jerusalem. So Judas left everything in the hands of God the Creator of the world and urged his soldiers to be willing to die for the law, the temple, Jerusalem, the country, and our Jewish way of life. Judas camped with his army near the town of Modin, and he told them, "When you go into battle, shout, 'God gives victory.'" Then later that night, he and a chosen group of brave young troops attacked the enemy camp near the king's tent. They killed almost 2,000 foreigners, as well as the soldier who was leading the elephants. Our troops terrified and confused the enemy soldiers, then left victoriously at dawn, because the Lord had been helping Judas. Antiochus and Judas make an agreement. King Antiochus had seen how bravely our Jewish soldiers fought, so he decided on a plan to destroy the places where they had stationed their troops. His troops surrounded and attacked their strong fortress at Beth-Zur, but they were turned back and defeated. Meanwhile, Judas had been sending supplies to the soldiers in Beth-Zur. At the same time, a Jewish soldier named Rodicus was passing secrets to the king, but he was finally captured and put in prison. Sometime later, Antiochus decided to try a second time to make peace with the people of Beth-Zur. He did so, and then attacked Judas. However, he lost this battle as well. Antiochus had left an official named Philip to run the government for him in Antioch, but Philip rebelled. Antiochus did not know what else to do, and so he worked out an agreement with our people, giving us everything we wanted and promising to treat us fairly. He also offered a sacrifice. Then he honored the temple in Jerusalem with gifts, and he had a friendly meeting with Judas. Finally, Antiochus appointed Hegemonides governor of the territory between the towns of Ptolemais and Gerar. Then he went to Ptolemais, where the Gentiles were furious with him for making an agreement with us. In fact, they were so angry that they urged him to cancel the treaty. But Lysias made a speech in which he thoroughly explained the agreement. Everyone was fully convinced and pleased by what he said, and then he left for Antioch. So the invasion by Antiochus turned into a retreat. Alcimus causes trouble for Judas. Chapter 14. 3 years later, Judas and his army learned that Demetrius, the son of King Seleucus, had sailed into the port city of Tripolis with a powerful army and navy. They also found out that Demetrius had put to death both King Antiochus and Lysias, his guardian, and was now ruling the country. A man named Alcimus had earlier been appointed high priest, but when our nation was at war, he eagerly adopted the Greek way of life. Because of this, Alcimus knew that he was in danger from our people and would never be high priest again. So, in about the year 151 of the Syrian kingdom, Alcimus went to King Demetrius and presented him with a gold crown and a palm branch. He also handed him some olive branches from the temple area, as was the custom. However, Alcimus did not mention his desire to be high priest. Sometime later, Demetrius invited Alcimus to a meeting of the royal council and asked him to explain what the Jewish people were planning. Alcimus immediately took this chance to express his own crazy ideas, and he said, "King Demetrius, there is a devout group of Jews who are led by Judas Maccabeus. They are nothing but rebels, and they will never stop causing trouble in your kingdom. And so I have given up the honorable position of high priest that has always been in my family. I have come here not only because I am truly concerned about your interests as ruler, but because I am eager to help my people. That foolish group of Jews has brought terrible suffering on our nation. Now you know the truth, so please be kind and generous, just as you always are, and help our oppressed people. As long as Judas is alive, your kingdom will never have any peace." After Alcimus had finished talking, the other advisers told how much they hated Judas. Then Demetrius became so furious that he immediately appointed Nicanor to be the new governor of Judea. This was the same Nicanor who had been the commander of his war elephants. Then Demetrius sent him to Judea, with orders to kill Judas and scatter his army, and afterwards to make Alcimus high priest of the glorious temple. Many foreigners in Judea had been attacked by Judas at one time or another, and so they rushed to join Nicanor's army, hoping to profit from any trouble they could cause our people. Nicanor treats the Jews with kindness. When our people found out that Nicanor was coming to attack with all of these Gentiles, they smeared dirt on their heads to show their sorrow. Then they prayed to God, who had chosen them to be his people forever and had always used his power to rescue them. Judas ordered his troops to march at once to the village of Desau, where they attacked Nicanor. Judas's brother Simon also ordered his troops into the battle, but for the moment they were retreating because of a surprise move on the part of Nicanor's army. Meanwhile, someone told Nicanor just how fearless Judas and his soldiers were and how fiercely they defended their nation. So Nicanor changed his mind about trying to defeat them in battle, and instead he sent Posidonius, Theodotus, and Mattathias to make peace with them. After the details of a peace treaty had been decided, Nicanor informed his troops, and they made an agreement. Then Judas and Nicanor chose a day to meet privately, and when that day arrived, a chariot came out of each camp, and fancy chairs were set up. Judas had placed armed guards at key positions around the meeting place, just in case the enemy had set a trap. But the meeting was very friendly. Nicanor stayed in Jerusalem for a time, but he did not cause any trouble, and he sent home many people who had sided with him. He and Judas became close friends and spent a lot of time together. Judas even followed Nicanor's advice to get married and start a family, like everyone else. Nicanor and Judas become enemies again. When Alcimus the high priest discovered that Nicanor and Judas were friends, he took a copy of their agreement to King Demetrius and said, "Nicanor has betrayed your government. He's going to let that rebel Judas take his place as governor." Demetrius became so irritated and angry as he listened to that worthless Alcimus make these charges that he wrote and told Nicanor, "I do not like the agreement that you made with Judas, and I order you to arrest him and send him to Antioch at once." Nicanor was upset and saddened by the orders to cancel an agreement with this innocent man. Still, he could not disobey the king, so he started looking for an opportunity to take Judas by surprise. Judas noticed that Nicanor was no longer treating him like a friend, and he guessed that trouble was on the way. So he and a number of his followers went into hiding. When Nicanor found out that he had been outsmarted, he went to the famous and holy Jerusalem temple at the time of sacrifice and demanded that the priests hand Judas over to him. But the priests swore that they did not know where to find Judas. Nicanor shook his right fist at the temple and said, "Find Judas, or else I swear that I'll destroy this temple and the altar of your god. Then I'll build a glorious temple for the god Dionysus on this very spot." After this, he left. The priests immediately stretched their arms toward heaven and prayed to God, the defender of our nation. They said, "Our holy Lord God, you have everything, and yet you were pleased to let us build a temple so that you could live here with us. We have only recently dedicated this temple again. Please keep it holy forever and ever." Rhazes gives his life for the nation. Rhazes was one of the most highly respected leaders in Jerusalem, and during the war for freedom he had risked his life for his faith. In fact, he was so generous that he was known as the father of our country. Someone brought charges against him to Nicanor, who took this as an opportunity to show his hatred for our people by doing us some real harm. So he sent more than 500 troops to arrest Rhazes, who was in a tower surrounded by a walled-in courtyard. But the soldiers started beating down the gate to the courtyard while shouting orders to set the doors of the tower on fire. Rhazes knew he was trapped, and he threw himself on his sword, because he was from an important family and wanted to die with honor rather than at the hands of godless men. In all the confusion, Rhazes only wounded himself with a sword. Meanwhile, crowds of people were forcing their way into the tower, and so with great courage, Rhazes climbed to the top of the tower and jumped. Everyone on the ground quickly moved back, making room for him to land on the ground. Alive, but angry, Rhazes stood up and ran through the crowd to the top of a steep rock with blood gushing from his terrible wounds. He had lost most of his blood when he tore out his insides with both hands and threw them down at the people, while praying aloud, "Lord of life and breath, I trust you to give these back to me." Then he died. Nicanor's Cruel Plan. Chapter 15. Nicanor was told that Judas had led our army to the region of Samaria. So Nicanor planned to attack on the Sabbath when we would not fight back. Nicanor had forced some of our people to join his army, and they said, "The God who sees everything has appointed the Sabbath to be the most holy day, and it would be vicious and cruel to attack Jews on that day." But that horrible Nicanor replied, "Did some great ruler in heaven really command you Jews to honor the Sabbath?" "Yes," they answered, "and that ruler is the living Lord and King of heaven." Then Nicanor remarked, "Well, I'm your ruler here on earth, and I order you to get your weapons and finish the job the king gave you to do." But Nicanor was unable to carry out his cruel plan. Judas encourages his troops. With great pride, Nicanor boasted that he would build a public monument in honor of his victory over Judas and his army. But Judas was certain that the Lord would come to their rescue, and he encouraged his troops by saying, "Don't be afraid when the enemy attacks. Remember, God All-Powerful will send help from heaven today, just as he has done in the past." Judas encouraged his troops by reading to them from their sacred scriptures and by reminding them of the battles they had already won. The troops were now excited and eager to fight. So Judas gave them their orders and pointed out that Gentiles never kept their promises. His words offered them more hope and encouragement than their shields and spears. Judas has a dream. Judas gave his troops further encouragement by telling them what he had seen in a dream, one that he knew they could trust. He said, "I saw Onias, the high priest. He was both gentle and kind, as well as humble and honest. He also had a gift for speaking, and had been brought up well. In my dream, Onias was praying for the whole nation with his arms outstretched. Next I saw a dignified and very important-looking man with gray hair. Onias said to me, 'This man is God's prophet, Jeremiah. He loves our nation and our holy city of Jerusalem so much that he never stops praying for us.' Then with his right hand, Jeremiah handed me a gold sword and said, 'This sacred sword is a gift from God. Take it, and cut your enemies to pieces.'" Everyone, young and old, was encouraged by what Judas had said. They felt so brave and strong that they decided to rush out of camp and fight Nicanor's troops in hand-to-hand combat in order to protect the city, the holy things, and the temple. In fact, they went into battle so concerned about the sacred temple that they gave no thought to their own families. Meanwhile, the people of Jerusalem were anxious and worried about those who had left to fight in the countryside. Judas defeats Nicanor's army. Everyone was waiting to see who would win the battle. The enemy troops had lined up and were moving forward, protected on both sides by cavalry. They also had elephants stationed in places where they could help the most. As Judas watched this huge enemy army advance, he looked carefully at the different kinds of weapons and the savage elephants. Then he stretched his arms toward heaven and prayed to the Lord who works miracles, because he knew that the Lord gives victory to those who deserve it, and not to those who have a lot of swords and armor. This is what he prayed. "Lord of heaven, when Hezekiah was king of Judea, you sent an angel who killed 185,000 troops that belonged to King Sennacherib. Now, please send a good angel to make our enemies tremble with fear. Then use your mighty arm to destroy those who have cursed you and attacked your holy people. Nicanor's soldiers blew trumpets and chanted war songs as they attacked. But our troops begged God for help and fought back with swords in their hands and prayers in their hearts. They killed at least 35,000 enemy troops that day, and they celebrated because God had shown them his power. After the battle, Judas and his soldiers were happily on their way home when they found Nicanor lying dead on the ground but still wearing his armor. So they all shouted and jumped about, praising the Lord All-Powerful in their native language. Judas had always been a faithful defender of his country, and he was just as patriotic now as he was when he was young. So he ordered his troops to chop off Nicanor's head and right arm and take them to Jerusalem. When they reached the city, Judas called everyone together. He told the priests to stand in front of the altar, and he sent for the enemy soldiers in the fortress. Judas showed them the head of that godless Nicanor. Then he let them see the arm of this arrogant and disgusting man who had shaken his fist at the holy temple of God All-Powerful. Finally, he cut out the tongue of this worthless man and said, "I am going to feed it piece by piece to the birds. Then I am going to nail his head and arm on the wall of the fortress opposite the temple as proof of his foolishness." Everyone looked toward heaven and prayed, "Our Lord, we praise you for protecting your sacred temple and for showing us your wonderful power." Judas nailed Nicanor's head to the wall of the fortress as evidence that the Lord had helped his people. Then everyone decided to remember this day forever by celebrating a festival on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is called Adar in Aramaic. The festival of Mordecai is celebrated the day before. This was how Nicanor died, and now that our people have ruled Jerusalem since his death, it is time to bring my story to an end. Some final thoughts. I have tried to write a brief but interesting book. If it is boring and poorly written, I can only say that I have done my best. To drink wine by itself can be harmful to your health, and the same can be said of drinking water by itself. But if they are mixed together, they make an enjoyable drink. And so I have mixed a variety of styles to make my book interesting both for those who read it aloud and for those who hear it read. The End.
This ends 2 Maccabees. And now, 3 Maccabees.
3 Maccabees. About this book. This book is probably called 3 Maccabees because it follows 1 and 2 Maccabees in the ancient Greek manuscripts. However, it isn't really about the Maccabees at all. Rather, it tells about the terrible suffering of the Jews living in Egypt during the rule of King Ptolemy IV Philopater, 221 to 203 BC. King Philopater started hating the Jews when they told him that he wasn't allowed to enter the Jerusalem temple. He tried anyway, and after God stopped him, Philopater returned to Egypt, where he started causing trouble for the Jews there. He ordered them to worship an Egyptian god, and when they refused, he brought them together to be trampled by angry elephants. The rest of 3 Maccabees tells how God rescued these Jews 3 times, and how Philopater finally recognized that he could not harm God's people. The Jews were released, and they returned to their homes, celebrating and praising God. 3 Maccabees was probably written to comfort the Jews who were suffering under the rule of the Romans in the 1st century B.C. The author encouraged the Jews to remain faithful to God, who will always protect his people. Dositheus saves Philopater's life. Chapter 1. When King Philopater ruled Egypt, King Antiochus of Syria invaded and took over much of his territory. Some of the Egyptians escaped and told Philopater what had happened. So he immediately called together his entire army, including foot soldiers and cavalry troops. He took along his sister, Arsinoe, and led the Egyptian troops to the region near Raphia, where Antiochus and his army were camped. That same night, a man named Theodotus decided to murder Philopater to end the war between Egypt and Syria. He took with him many of the best Egyptian weapons that had been assigned to him years before, and he sneaked into Philopater's tent. But there was a Jewish man by the name of Dositheus who had given up the religion of his ancestors and was now loyal to the Egyptians. Dositheus somehow learned what Theodotus planned to do, and he arranged for Philopater to be away from his tent that night and for some unimportant man to sleep there in his place. So Theodotus killed an innocent man. The Egyptians defeat the Syrians. Not long after the fighting broke out between the Egyptians and the Syrians, Philopater realized his troops would be defeated. So his sister Arsinoe went to the Egyptian troops in tears and with tangled hair, and she begged them to fight bravely for their wives and children. She even promised to pay every soldier 4 pounds of gold if the Syrians were defeated. Arsinoe's plan worked. The Egyptians defeated the Syrians and took many of them prisoners. After that victory, Philopater visited the nearby cities to meet the people and donate gifts to their places of worship. The people felt much safer after his visits, and they respected him as their ruler. Philopater visits Jerusalem and asks to enter the temple. The Jews sent some of their religious leaders to meet King Philopater and to congratulate him on what he had done. Their visit, together with the gifts, made Philopater even more anxious to visit their cities. Sometime later, Philopater arrived in Jerusalem and went to the temple, where he offered the usual sacrifices and gave thanks to God Most High. The size and beauty of the temple amazed Philopater so much that he wanted to see what it looked like inside. The Jews who walked with Philopater said, "Your Majesty, not even our priests can enter the most holy place in the temple. Only the high priest is allowed inside, and he can enter at a certain time just once a year." Philopater refused to believe them. Then someone opened a copy of the Law of Moses and read aloud the part where God forbids anyone except the high priest to enter the most holy place in the temple. The king replied, "Even if others aren't allowed to enter this temple, why can't I go in? No one has ever refused to let me enter a temple before." Without thinking, someone foolishly answered, "You're wrong to think you can go into this temple just because you've gone into others." Philopater said, "After everything I've done for this country, I should be allowed inside whether you say it's all right or not." The people of Jerusalem try to stop Philopater. The priests in their priestly robes bowed down and begged God Most High to help them stop the evil thing that Philopater was about to do. They cried so loudly that everyone in Jerusalem was scared and ran to the temple because they knew something very unusual was happening. Young women who had never been out in public sprinkled dust on their heads to show their sorrow, then rushed outside with their mothers. The sounds of their crying and moaning filled the streets of Jerusalem. Women who were engaged to be married left their bedrooms and huddled together in the streets, many of them half naked. Mothers and the women who took care of their newborn babies were in such a hurry to get to the holy temple that they completely forgot about the babies and left them behind in houses and in the streets. Everyone ran to the temple, then prayed and begged God to keep Philopater from entering the temple. Meanwhile, a group of brave people had their own plan about how to stop Philopater. They told the soldiers in the city to get their weapons and to be ready to die bravely for the sake of the ancient law of Moses. These people caused a lot of confusion at the temple, until finally the older men and the respected leaders convinced them to stop and to pray with the others. Everyone prayed sincerely, while the religious leaders tried to talk Philopater out of his arrogant plan. But they were not successful. He stubbornly ignored everything they said and started walking toward the temple. As he did, the people near him, including some of his own officers, began praying and begging God All-Powerful to defend them from the coming disaster and to punish the evil King Philopater. Nothing could be heard except their loud prayers. In fact, it seemed as if the walls of Jerusalem and the earth itself were praying along with them. The people agreed that it would be better for them to die than to watch Philopater make their temple unfit as a place to worship God. Simon the High Priest prays. Chapter 2. Simon the High Priest turned toward the temple and kneeled down. Then he raised his arms to heaven and calmly prayed. Our Lord God All-Powerful, you alone are the Holy King of heaven and the ruler of all creation. We are in misery and are suffering because of an evil and arrogant man, so hear our prayers. You created all things and rule over them with fairness, and you punish those who depend on their own power. In the past, you destroyed everyone who did what was wrong, including the mighty giants that you wiped out with a raging flood. You sent burning sulfur to kill the proud people of the town of Sodom, making those wicked people an example for anyone who would dare follow their evil ways. Your fearsome power was seen when you punished the king of Egypt for making slaves of your holy people Israel. You punished that arrogant king in terrible ways, and when he chased your people with his troops and chariots, you drowned them in the deep waters of the Red Sea, and you rescued those who trusted you. The whole earth is under your control. After the Israelites saw your amazing victory, they praised you, God All-Powerful. Our king, you created this entire world, and it is too large to measure. You have everything, yet you chose this city of Jerusalem as your own, and you blessed this temple where you are worshipped. You came here in the brightness of your glory, and made this temple the one place where you would be praised and honored forever. Your love for Israel is strong, and you promised that if trouble causes any of us to sin, you would listen when we come here to pray. You have always been faithful to keep that promise. Many times in the past, you rescued our ancestors when they were being mistreated by wicked enemies. So now, our holy king, look how we are suffering because we have sinned against you. We can do nothing. Our enemies are in control. This evil man is taking advantage of our distress and is now on his way into the holy temple built to honor only you. We know that your home is in the highest heavens, and that no person can ever go there. Yet you have kindly chosen the people of Israel as your own, and have made this temple the place where your glory will stay. Please do not punish us for the wicked things that King Philopater and his men are doing. If you do, then our enemies will brag and claim that their strength destroyed our temple as if it were nothing but a pagan place of worship. Forgive us for sinning against you, and show us your mercy right now, so that those who are depressed and hopeless can sing praises to you. Help us to have peace. God punishes Philopater. The holy God, who created all things and watches over them, heard Simon's prayer and knocked Philopater down as easily as wind blows down tall grass. Philopater was paralyzed and unable to speak, because God had punished him for being arrogant and boastful. Philopater's officers and bodyguards were terrified. They panicked and thought he was dying, so they dragged him away from the crowd. Philopater recovered, yet he would not apologize to the Jews, even though he had been severely punished. He left Jerusalem, shouting angry threats at them. Philopater mistreats the Jews in Alexandria. King Philopater went home to Alexandria, where he immediately started mistreating all the Jews. The friends who drank with him encouraged this because they didn't know what it meant to do right. Philopater did more terrible things than could be counted, but he still wasn't satisfied. He also spread horrible rumors about the Jews living in the surrounding towns and villages. Many of his closest friends agreed to do whatever they could to help him cause trouble for the Jews and completely disgrace them. In fact, he set up a memorial stone on the tall tower in the courtyard of the Jewish place of worship with a sign that read, "Jews must offer sacrifices to the Greek god Dionysus before they will be allowed to enter this place of worship. The name of every Jew must also be written in a record book to make sure that all taxes are paid and that the Jews remain as slaves. Anyone who refuses to do these things will be arrested and put to death. The ivy leaf, symbol of the god Dionysus, must be tattooed on the skin of all Jews, and their few remaining privileges will be completely stripped away." Philopater did not want people to think he hated everyone, and so he had the following words written on the same sign: "If any of the Jews decide to start worshipping the god Dionysus, they will be given the full rights of native Alexandrians." The Jews respond to Philopater's threat. Some of the Jews in Alexandria did not want to pay the price of remaining faithful to their own religion, so they pledged their loyalty to Philopater and hoped that things would now go better for them. However, most of the Jews would not abandon their religion, and instead bribed the officials in charge of the record books to avoid being killed. These faithful Jews firmly believed that someone would soon rescue them. They hated the group of rebellious Jews that had chosen to be loyal to Philopater and considered them enemies, refusing to have anything to do with them. The Threat Against the Jews Living Around Alexandria. Chapter 3. As soon as the evil king Philopater learned what the Jews were doing to avoid being punished, he became terribly angry at the Jews in Alexandria, and even more furious at those living in the countryside. He immediately gave orders to bring them together and brutally put every one of them to death. While this was being arranged, some people who wanted to see the Jews suffer started a hateful rumor, saying the Jews were constantly trying to stop others from obeying the king's laws. But in fact, the Jews were always loyal to the king and never caused trouble of any kind. They worshipped their god and obeyed his law, and they were careful to eat their own food. All this made some people believe the Jews were nothing but troublemakers. Most people respected the Jews and thought they were honest people. Yet there were foreigners who ignored all the good things that the Jews did in Egypt, and instead believed every rumor about them. These foreigners gossiped about the Jews and made fun of their worship and their food. They also spread cruel rumors that the Jews opposed the king and disobeyed government leaders. One day, some of the Gentiles who lived in Alexandria saw an angry mob mistreating a group of Jews. These Gentiles were shocked, but because they were ruled by the same cruel leaders, they had no power to do anything except encourage the Jews and tell them things would get better. They knew that the Jews did not deserve to be treated so badly. In fact, some business leaders and friends of the Jews secretly began promising that they would help them in every way possible. Philopater orders the arrest of every Jew in his kingdom. King Philopater was very proud of what he was accomplishing, and he believed nothing was powerful enough to stop him, including God Most High. Philopater wrote the following letter: "Greetings from King Ptolemy Philopater to my army commanders and soldiers in the surrounding territories. I hope you are well. Our kingdom is strong and secure. In fact, the fighting in Asia was very successful because the gods were definitely on our side. So we decided to be kind to the people living in the territories of Greater Syria and to treat them as friends instead of enemies. We even gave lots of money to honor their places of worship. Our plan was to do the same for the Jerusalem temple, where those wicked and foolish Jews worship. They said they were glad we were there, but when we asked to enter their holy temple and honor it with expensive offerings, they refused to let us in. They were very arrogant, just as they have always been. We should have punished them right then, but since we are so kind to everyone, we did not harm them. The Jews are the only people who refuse to believe that foreign rulers can be honest and fair. That's why they despise and hate us. When we returned to Egypt after our victories, we treated the Jews very well, just as we treat all foreigners, and we decided to leave them to their own foolish ways. We also told everyone that we would be kind to the Jews, because not only had they signed a treaty with us, but they had often been involved in government matters. We even offered the Jews the opportunity to become full citizens of Alexandria and invited them to participate in our religious ceremonies. But those stubborn Jews were offended by our generous offer, and as always, they chose what is evil and rejected the chance to become Alexandrians. Then they completely cut off their own people, who chose to accept our offer of citizenship. They seem to think that we will soon change our policy toward them. All of this shows how ignorant they are. We have concluded that many of the Jews are simply opposed to us in every way. And so, to avoid having these wicked people rebel openly against us someday, we have come up with a plan. As soon as you have read this letter, send us every Jewish man, woman, and child living in your territory. Show them no mercy, and bind them in chains to keep them from escaping. And when they arrive here, we will be sure they are put to death as worthless criminals and enemies. Once every Jew is dead, our kingdom will once again be peaceful. Anyone, whether old or young, who secretly hides a Jew will be tortured to death, together with every family member. But any person who tells us where a Jew is hiding will be paid 2,000 silver coins and will be honored as a hero. That person will also receive the property of the criminal who is caught hiding Jews, and the hiding place will be completely burned and closed up forever. The above letter was copied and sent everywhere in Philopater's kingdom. The Jews are brought to Alexandria. Chapter 4. In every town where Philopater's letter was received, the leaders held a public feast in honor of the Greek people, who celebrated because they no longer had to hide their bitter hatred of the Jews. But the Jews in these towns were extremely frightened and depressed, and they could not stop mourning and crying about the king's command to kill them. In the streets of every city and village in the kingdom, Jews groaned in sorrow as army commanders prepared to send them to Alexandria. The punishment of the Jews was so severe that some of their enemies cried and felt sorry that they had to face such a horrible death. Old men who could barely walk were cruelly forced to march out of their hometowns in straight lines, and young women who had just been married stopped singing joyful songs and moaned in sadness. Many of them sprinkled ashes on their sweet-smelling hair and removed their wedding veils, and they cried aloud as the Greek officers severely abused them. The crowds watched as these brides were dragged in chains to the dock, where boats were waiting to take them to Alexandria. Their new husbands also realized that they would soon die. They were forced to wear ropes around their necks instead of flowers, and they stopped their joyful celebration and moaned in pain. Jewish bridegrooms were led along the streets with ropes instead of chains of flowers around their necks. What should have been a time for them to celebrate became a time to mourn, because they knew they were going to die. The Jews were tied in chains and dragged on board the boats like wild animals. Some of them were tied to the benches with ropes around their necks, while others were held there with chains around their ankles. They were all treated like rebels and were put below deck so they would be in total darkness during the trip to Alexandria. The Jews are held prisoner. The boats that brought the Jews to Alexandria docked at Skidia. Then Philopater gave orders to move the Jews at once to the large stadium in front of the city gate. He did this so that everyone leaving or entering Alexandria could see the Jews and make fun of them. Besides that, the Jews would not be close enough to talk to the king's bodyguard, and they would not be in the city itself. Some of the Jews of Alexandria secretly left the city from time to time and went to the stadium where they mourned the terrible punishment of the Jewish prisoners. Philopater heard about this and was so furious that he commanded his troops to punish every Jew in Alexandria the same way. The name of every Jew was to be written in government records, but this time the Jews would not become slaves. The king planned for them to be violently tortured and then put to death. Although the king's officials worked 40 days to register Jews, they still did not finish. Philopater was excited that the Jews were finally going to be punished as he had planned, and he started behaving in odd ways and making no sense when he talked. He held feasts to honor his idols and praised them, even though they could not speak or help anyone. Philopater even dared to curse God Most High. Meanwhile, the officials who were in charge of registering the Jews went to the king and said, "We cannot finish this job. There are simply too many of them. Even if we had every general in Egypt helping us, it would be impossible. There are Jews still being brought to the stadium from their homes in the countryside." Philopater threatened to arrest these officials and accused them of accepting bribes from the Jews. Yet he quickly changed his mind when he saw that the officials had already run out of paper and pens. He did not realize that God All-Powerful had made this happen so that the Jews would be rescued. Philopater orders the death of every Jew. Chapter 5. Now King Philopater was more furious than ever, and he sent for Hermon, the man who took care of the elephants that were used in battle. Philopater gave him the following orders. "Tomorrow give all 500 elephants large handfuls of frankincense and all the undiluted wine they will drink. Then, after the elephants are angry and confused, release them in the stadium so that the Jews will be trampled to death." After that, the king returned to the feast where he and his trusted friends and army commanders celebrated the coming death of the Jews. Meanwhile, Hermon left to do what he had been told. The servants at the stadium believed the whole Jewish nation would be wiped out, and they wanted to make sure that none of their prisoners could escape. So that same evening, the servants went to the stadium and tied the Jews' hands. All the Gentiles were convinced that nothing could save the Jews now that they couldn't move. The Jews cried hard and prayed together in loud voices to the Lord God All-Powerful who rules everything. They called on his mercy, asking him to take revenge on the wicked foreigners and stop their evil plan, and begging him to rescue them from death. God heard their prayers. God rescues the Jews. Meanwhile, Hermon gave the unsuspecting elephants frankincense and wine until they would eat and drink no more. Then he went to the palace courtyard to tell King Philopater that everything had been done according to plan. But the Lord had caused Philopater to fall into a deep sleep. That was the Lord's way of rescuing the Jews. In fact, Philopater was so sleepy that he wasn't able to give Hermon the orders to carry out the evil plan. The time set aside to kill the Jews had now passed, so they celebrated and praised their holy God for his kindness, then asked him to show the arrogant foreigners his mighty power. By now it was the middle of the afternoon, and the official in charge of the celebration at the palace saw that the guests had started arriving. So he tried to wake Philopater. When he was finally awake, the official told him what had happened and that the feast was ready to begin. Philopater was still confused, and he immediately invited his guests to sit down, then started eating and drinking. He asked everyone there to enjoy themselves and forget about what was going on elsewhere. Sometime later, Philopater called for Hermon and demanded to know why the Jews were still alive. Haman and his officials explained that everything had been done the night before, just as the king had ordered. The Lapidar was angrier than a crazy man and said to Haman, "The Jews may have been saved today because I overslept, but the first thing tomorrow, make sure the elephants are ready to wipe out those worthless people." The guests at the feast cheered and approved of the king's plan, then went home. None of them slept well that night. They all lay awake, thinking of insults to shout at the doomed Jews. God rescues the Jews a second time. Early the next morning, just after the rooster started crowing, Haman finished giving the elephants frankincense and wine, and he began leading them down the long passageway that led into the stadium. Along the way, crowds of people were already gathering to see what horrible thing would happen to the Jews at daybreak. The Jews, meanwhile, had lost all hope. They knew they had little time left alive, so they raised their hands to heaven, and with loud moaning they cried out to God Most High, begging him to rescue them again. The sun was just coming up as Philopater welcomed his trusted friends to the palace. Haman finally arrived and told them everything was now ready, and he invited them to go to the stadium. But Philopater suddenly became very confused and had no idea what Haman was talking about. The king even had to ask Haman what he was inviting him to do. God, who rules over all things, had made Philopater forget his own plan. Haman and the king's friends told Philopater that the elephants and the soldiers were ready to kill the Jews, just as the king had ordered. This made the king furious, because God had made him forget everything. Philopater stared at Haman and the others and said, "I swear that if your parents or children were here, I would let the elephants eat them instead of eating the Jews. They have done nothing to me, and have always been loyal to my ancestors. If it weren't for your usefulness to me and my devotion to you, your lives would have ended long ago." Haman couldn't believe what he was hearing, and he suddenly became nervous and afraid. The king's friends quietly slipped out one by one and told the crowd of people to go on about their own business. When the Jews heard what the king had said, they knew at once that God had rescued them again, so they praised their Lord God, the king of all rulers. Philopater again tries to have the Jews killed. King Philopater called his guests back to the celebration and begged them to drink some more. He called for Haman and shouted in anger, "You worthless fool, how many times do I need to tell you to get those elephants ready? I want the Jews trampled tomorrow." The official sitting near Philopater thought he had gone crazy and asked, "Your Majesty, how long do you think we will wait for that to happen? We're not fools. You've said the same thing twice already, and you'll probably change your mind again. The city of Alexandria is crowded with people, and they are getting impatient and angry. We are afraid they might start a riot." In a violent rage, Philopater forgot that he had just praised the Jews for their loyalty. He yelled, "I swear by my own life that the elephants will trample the Jews to death immediately. I will attack the cities of Judea with torches and spears, so that their cities are nothing but ruins, and the temple in Jerusalem is burned to the ground. Since I wasn't allowed to enter that place, then no one will ever offer sacrifices there again." The king's trusted friends and army commanders were very excited as they left and ordered their troops to stand guard at key places around the city. The elephants are led into the stadium. Haman made sure the elephants had drunk plenty of wine and eaten lots of frankincense so that they were very angry and confused. He also tied small swords and knives to the sides and stomachs of the elephants. Then he went to the palace courtyard around dawn and told Philopater everything was ready. The city was filled with people crowding their way into the stadium to watch. Philopater stormed out of his palace to see the elephants and to watch the cruel and painful death of the Jews. The Jews in the stadium saw the dust that the elephants stirred up as they came closer to the gate, and they watched as soldiers and other people ran behind the elephants. And when the Jews heard the noisy crowd, they were convinced that their terrible wait was over and that they would soon die. They wept and groaned in sorrow as they kissed and hugged each other, but all of them, the parents and the children, the mothers with babies who were still nursing, all of them remembered that God had helped them before, so they bowed down on the ground to pray. Mothers laid aside their babies while everyone cried out to God in loud voices, asking him to have mercy on them as they faced death and for him to show the world that he is the ruler over everything. Eliezer Prays, Chapter 6. Eliezer was a Jewish priest who had been highly respected for all his long life, and he was one of the prisoners there in the stadium. He turned to the leaders near him and told them to stop praying. Then he prayed the following prayer. God Most High, our all-powerful King, you rule your creation with mercy. We are your children, so look down on us, the descendants of Abraham and Jacob. Long ago you chose us to be your own people, yet now we are dying as foreigners in a strange land. Our ancestors were once slaves here in Egypt, and the king who ruled over them proudly boasted about the strength of his chariots and troops. You showed the greatness of your mercy for the people of Israel and drowned that king and his entire army in the sea. King Sennacherib of Assyria also boasted about his large number of troops, and he was able to take control of every nation in the world. But when he insulted and attacked Jerusalem, your holy city, you shattered that cruel king and showed the world your power. Our Lord, you rescued the three young men who decided they would die in a flaming furnace rather than worship Babylonian idols. Not a hair on their heads was burned. You cooled the furnace with dew and burned up their enemies instead. And you rescued Daniel, who was punished for lies that others told against him, and who was thrown into a pit of lions. When you saw Jonah suffering in the stomach of a big fish in the ocean, you rescued him just as he was about to die, and you let him go safely back to his family. We are the people of Israel, and these corrupt foreigners are torturing and abusing us. You hate pride and boasting, and you love to show mercy and protect the weak. So let us see your power. Though we have turned against you in our captivity here in Egypt, please rescue us from our enemies. Our Lord, if you choose to destroy us, then do so now in whatever way you want. That way fools can't praise their worthless idols when we are killed or claim that you refused to rescue your own people. You are the eternal God, and you are strong and mighty. Protect us and have mercy on us, because these wicked people are about to put us to death as if we were traitors. Make them tremble with fear at your strength. We honor you, Lord. You are always victorious, and have the power to rescue us from death. Hear our prayers and the prayers of our children, and show all foreigners that you are on our side and have not rejected us. Keep your promise and be with us here in this enemy land. God appears and rescues the Jews. Just as Eliezer finished praying, King Philopater arrived at the stadium along with the elephants and his proud army. The Jews saw this and began praying so loudly that the nearby valleys echoed with their cries, and the noise terrified the soldiers. Just then the face of God All-Powerful, the one true God, appeared in the sky. He opened the gates of heaven, and two angels came down. Everyone in the stadium watched in complete horror, yet the Jews never saw a thing. The two angels fought the enemy troops and tied them up with unbreakable chains, leaving them completely shocked and terrified. Philopater himself began to shake with fear, and he was no longer puffed up with pride. Just then, the elephants turned around and started trampling the troops who were marching behind them. Philopater orders the release of the Jews. Philopater's anger suddenly turned to pity, and he cried at the thought of his evil plan to wipe out these Jews. When he heard them moaning and saw them bowed down, ready to face death, he screamed in anger at his own trusted friends. "You have rebelled against me and have acted more cruelly than slave masters. I have been kind to you, yet now you refuse to obey me and instead are secretly planning things that disgrace my kingdom. You were wrong and foolish to take these Jews from their homes and bring them to Alexandria. They have faithfully guarded our nation for years and are the only outsiders who have always been kind to us. I cannot believe that you disobeyed my law and planned to abuse these brave people. They have suffered long enough. I order you to release these Jews and free them from this unfair punishment. Send them back to their own homes in peace and beg for their forgiveness as they go. These are the children of God All-Powerful, the living God of heaven. He has constantly been a help to our kingdom since the days of our ancestors, and his children must be freed. As soon as Philopater had said these things, the Jews were released, and they praised their God for rescuing them from death. The Jews celebrate. Philopater went back to Alexandria and sent for the official who kept track of the kingdom's money. Philopater told him to buy enough wine and food so that the Jews could celebrate 7 days. The feast was to be held at the stadium because that was where they had expected to die. The Jews celebrated with shouts of joy. These same people who had been disgraced and close to death now cheered at the very place where they were supposed to die and be buried. They stopped their songs of mourning and sang praises to God, just like those their ancestors had sung, and they thanked him for saving them with his mighty power. They also arranged for musicians to celebrate by singing joyful songs. Philopater also celebrated at his own feast, and he thanked God for rescuing the Jews. His officials had believed that the Jews would die and be left as food for the birds. Now these same officials groaned in disgrace. They had been filled with arrogance and fiery anger as they registered the Jews to die. Now they were completely ashamed. While the Jews thanked God and ate at the feast, they listened to the musicians sing their songs of praise. After the Jews had finished celebrating, they decided this rescue should be remembered as a joyful celebration for 7 days each year. The festival would not be a time for getting drunk, but a time for them to remember how God had rescued